Hello guys, welcome back to another episode of Paradigma Show. We have a really special episode today because we will be talking about the Mexican cinema. And as I am wrapping my spring semester at Columbia College for my world cinema class, we had the chance to pick our topic and the medium for one of our assignments. So I decided to make a podcast and to talk about the birth of the Mexican film industry. I know, the Mexican cinema, you may ask. Well, the Mexican cinema is something I have always been curious about, and I just haven't had the chance to explore the subject. So this podcast gave me the chance to dig in a little bit more. Apart from studying film, I have been exploring identity themes as I deal with cultural assimilations myself, being a first-generation immigrant. I consider myself a Mexican-American, Hispanic, Latino. But is there such a thing as a Mexican? See, that's when we ask these questions about who we are and how we portray ourselves. What are the ideologies put in practice on us? So I was lucky enough to make it to the 2022 film festival. I wanted to talk about my experience there because I think it's important to mention the present day scene of the Mexican cinema and overall the Latin cinema itself as well too. So I will next talk a little bit about the history of Mexican cinema, and I will talk a little bit about my experience in the film festival that I attended. I attended the festival for 3 days. This was in Chicago, and it was in the Century Theater down on Clark and Clark and Belmont, something like that. But I mean, you can Google it up. Not a problem. So, as I was saying, I was lucky enough to be able to be there for 3 days and watch three different feature movies and three different short films from all over Latin America, from Guatemala, from Panama, from Venezuela, from Colombia, and Mexico. So there was quite a mix around what we were, or what I had the chance of watching. So it kind of remind me of the Nickelodeon era a little bit, and how it was described, you know, like Discofez and the filmmakers being in the showings. I say this because during one of the days that I attended to the festival, the filmmaker Marcelo Islas attended to the showing, and he was sitting next to me, so I found that to be really, really cool, worth sharing, because I asked him questions about the subject, so I can share it with you guys. And one of the movies that I watched was 1991, directed by Sergio Ramirez. A movie about Guatemala during the year 1991. I gotta say, there's quite some Kubrick influences there, and the way production design is done here. It's very clever, the way that they use production design. I love the costume, the characters wear, and just their approach in the way they told the story. It was so very it was sort of like a poem. It was a narrative, and it was very poetic in the way that he was going about his life, the life of Daniel, a teenager who lives in Guatemala and is dealing with the classism during this time. It's 1991. There's a civil war, and there is a very high contrast between classes, and fitting in that line where he's at, it's a nice nice story. Also, 1991, there was an eclipse in Guatemala that you could see, so it ties it in with the story. So we go back to this historical approach of looking at a film or a story. 1991, very specific time, and with the eclipse, it's a motif in the story, and very effective motif in the way that it ties everything together. 1991, I recommend it. Yeah, I'd like to add again, just before I move on with the next film, 1991. Great film. I guess I'll move on, so I don't make this all about the films, which they all deserve a separate podcast, but I need to just keep it moving and go on to the next one. And so for the second day, oh, I'm sorry, that day, so that was the first movie I watched. It was with the short Zarzar. This was a Colombian short, and the story was about a father caring for his son while driving through the town. Zarzales is the name of the city in Colombia. So we got a lot of points of view in this film, because we're in the ride with them. Kind of, the father puts the kid in his lap as he drives through the town. So it's a nicely done film in the way that it takes you in the ride, and it's very effective as well. For the second day, I watch the movie Mi Novia Es La Revolución. In English, is My Girlfriend Is the Revolution, directed by Marcelo Islas Hernández. Which I have to say, it was one of my favorite movies. It got third place in the Audience Choice Award. So, this movie, again, we go back to very specific times in history, and they all kind of happen to be in the 90s. This kind of movie takes place in 1994, very specific time in Mexico, because after, well, in this time of the era, one of the candidates for presidency was murdered. He got shot. So, I mean, it was very chaotic for the nation to deal with all that. And there's pretty clear memory. If you're a Mexican, you know where you were when you got the news that Colosio was murdered. I personally did not remember that because I was 4, and that was not part of my consciousness. But in this story, it takes place in the 1994 in Mexico, and it's the story about a girl who becomes a rebel. Well, she moves out from her own neighborhood, and she goes through character change, and she is gonna have her 15, but she kind of don't want to have her no more because she has find out her true self, so she doesn't really care for nothing like that. She has found herself, and she don't care for the dresses and the parties. And once she needs to come in terms with accepting that that she has to be bigger than she has to be the bigger person, and she goes through it, and in a way that she's empowered, and it becomes a circle, and it's very. It's a nice movie. I will recommend. By the way, I was sitting, the director was there, Marcelo Islas, and I asked him what he thought about the future of the Mexican cinema. And what he told me was he wasn't really sure about it since the platform is unpredictable since, yeah, we're streaming at the moment, but we never really know if people are gonna be back in the theater in like the old days, and it's just really, you really don't know for sure, but that's what he told me. And I find that to be very valid and truthful. So that was my second day going, and it was a really cool experience. I met the producer and the lead actress as well. And just to put it into kind of something that I found interesting is the way that he produces his films. It's a family-based production. His wife is the producer, And in this movie, her daughter was the lead actress. And the he has other family involved. So I heard him say, you know, whenever the family gets together, that's when we get working on the next thing. So I find that kind of interesting. Yeah, I never. Well, maybe just it's nice to have a family that it's all in the industry. But he seemed really humble and really enjoying his movie, being there with his family, and just he was really grateful to be there. And it was really nice for him to answer the questions he was asked. You know, he got a lot of questions about the character, who's her daughter, and you know, how she gets to work with him, and how's that work, and in terms of the way that he did certain, like why he chose to have a horse, she riding a horse, and it was kind of cool to be able to hear that, to hear his his take, you know, his purpose. So that was nice. And that second day, for the short that we watched a really interesting short called Puzzles. And this one is from Venezuela. So you really get right away this, you see that it's not going to be a high budget film. It's a re it's a, you, yeah you see that right off the bat, but the way that they use their production design, it is very effective in the way that it's simple, but it's authentic, and it tells a story and it moves a story, and it's all you really need, and it's sufficient to keep going to the next scene. So the story is about a man who makes puzzles, and every time he finishes a puzzle, he seems to be missing a piece, and this keeps happening and happening. So after a few puzzles that he's assembled, he had enough, and he contacts the company and makes an appointment to make a petition to request the pieces that he's been missing. So the company, you know, tries to comply and tell him, you know, you're the customer, you're right, we're gonna do everything in our power to get you those pieces. But he has to go through so many levels that it's kind of sickening for him to not be able to get the pieces that he needs, you know, and this metaphor of trying to find that last one, that last piece. And it's very effective in this one, and I enjoy the ideologies that they embraced in this story, because clearly this is a film about communism and different political parties and the way that systems run. You know, everybody's trying to give you that peace and reality. You know, you gotta find that for yourself. But I will Put the links below so you guys can check out the trailers and maybe check out the movies if you're interested. I think they might be up for a couple more days in the Latino Film Festival website. On Thursday, in my viewing of the Chicago Film Festival, I watch a local film. This local film, it was really interesting. I mean, I honestly, from all the movies, this was the one that I wanted to watch. Bye Bye Chicago. The number one reason was because this was a Chicago film, and I wanted to see what was going on in the scene. The film, it's a low budget film. The producer likes to call it a no budget film, and I agree with that. The story is about a Mexican immigrant man who is afraid of dying in Chicago because he wants to die in Mexico because that's his country. So the journey of this man in Chicago, he has some friends that wanna help him get through him. In the theater, it seemed that this is, well, should be, I shouldn't, but there is an issue of Mexican immigrants, or just, I mean, in this case, it does talk specifically about the Mexican issue, but of course, this could apply for any immigrant. But yeah, in the theater when the movie was done, people asked about solutions for those people that can't go back to their countries and they have to die in a country that they don't know. So nobody seemed to have the answer for that, so I found that bizarre. Because the movie is about a man who can't go back to his country, or at least can't for some reason. And for me, it was a good movie. In my taste, it was a lot of music, you know? So kind of like, but overall, I like that it happened, and I like to see more Chicago films like that. And keep on doing for that third day. The short was Birthday Boy, a film from Panama, and it deal with LGBT themes, and it was a nice short in the way that they use well, they use a lot of lights and colors significantly for this one, and the way that the character was going through it. And this short actually got the first place for the Shorts Audience Award, and I will link it so you guys can watch it. But hey, I just wanted to really talk about the films that I watch, because again, it will connect with the theme that I'm talking about, which is the birth of the Mexican film industry. I was just in Mexico for winter break after nearly being gone from about 2 decades not visiting my family. I had not seen my dad for almost 30 years. I mean, I've talked to him over the phone and messaged him, but never really got the chance to see him face to face. I grew up in Mexico, so walking back in the neighborhood that you walk when you were a little kid is just an emotional moment. And my trip and my last day, I spend the day visiting Mexico City. And let me tell you, it was a special moment for me because, I mean, come on, it's Mexico City. Really, as I had mentioned about as I had mentioned about exploring identity themes in the terms of cultural assimilation, Mexico City is a museum in a way, because it contains the history in it. So I agree with that, because as you're walking through the public transportation, you're taking a train. The first time that I had to take a train in the public transportation in Mexico, there was a time where I got out of the train and I was walking, and through the glass there was a pyramid. And I asked my nephew, like, whoa, yeah, we are literally in the city of the Aztecs. This is the city of the Aztecs. Like, so literally, Mexico City is built upon the pyramids. And so much history is there. I had to stop myself for moments, because it was just, I was missing a lot. And for example, just like walking and seeing art from the pre-Hispanic art, and it was just really kind of like going back to who you are in a way, if that's one of the ways. Because again, to answer that question, like, what does it mean to be a Mexican? Like, and how does film answer that question, right? Because that's how film impacts Mexico in a way. So let me go into a little bit about the history. Well, not the history, but like something cool Something cool because, like, I like my birthday. I like my birthday. My birthday comes on a good day, I feel like. It's in August. And August 14th, it's just like the day has always been so amazing every year, like in the way of like weather-wise. Like, it's always nice and sunny, nice weather. So I always like my birthday. I don't know. I think I have some of the coolest birthdays. I mean, it's not to brag or anything, but I just think August 14 is a cool birthday, and people who have August 14 know this. We're Leos. So it's kind of cool. But my point here is, or my, yes, on August 14, only on the year 1896, the first public exhibition took place in Mexico City. The place was in a pharmacy, and the exhibition was the cinematograph. The cinematograph was invented by the brothers Louis Jean and Augustin Lumiere. They introduced the apparatus in France a year prior, 1895. So, know, France was the motherland of cinema, in my opinion, because the way it this, yeah, I mean, how did they distribute the apparatus throughout the world? The brothers made a team of filmmakers and sent them off. So there you have all these agents throughout the world going to different countries presenting this new technology. So this is what happened with the two agents that traveled to Mexico. One his name is the Fernand Bond. The second is Gabriel. I wish I could say his last name. But man, it's cool if we call him Gabriel than Fernand. I will link their names if you guys are interested. But I mean, there were the Lumiere agents who were the first kind of middleman from the cinematograph during the time. So they traveled in first class from France to New York, from New York to Mexico City. They sailed in first class and they traveled in first class through train from New York to Mexico City. So that was a trip for them. It's interesting to check out the way the Lumiere brothers were able to distribute this new technology, this new way of telling stories. So going back to the story of these two guys, traveling from France to New York and New York to Mexico City. I think about the time that I went to Mexico City, and I could only imagine for them what it was like to travel that and to see the city for the first time. It had to be something so poetic, in a way of like I said, the Mexico is like a museum. So if you want to talk about that time, it's, you see, these guys are getting ready to present their apparatus. So they actually are connected with a, is it an, I think it's an engineer. His last name is Ferrari. He's an engineer. He's really interested in photography, though. He's really interested in photography. And he knows, he's really interested in photography, and he knows the commander of war. And of course, the commander of war knows the president of the republic, Porfirio Diaz, General Porfirio Diaz. So there you have it. This, the journey of the Lumiere brothers traveling from France all the way to Mexico City and actually just meeting with the president. They have dinner and they watch their films, and it says that, General Porfirio Diaz jumps of happiness in the presence of his new toy. He actually agrees to be filmed the day after, riding his horse in his castle in El Castillo de Chapultepec. And this is a really symbolic place because, it's a sacred place for our ancestors. So yeah, he agrees to get film, and becomes one of the themes of what does it mean to be Mexican, right? As he go on, he embodies that. So I was sharing in about my birthday. It's kind of cool, but that was the day that it was public to every, not to everybody, of course, but I mean to the public who was available to attend. But they actually got there a little earlier than that and only showed the president. And that was that. It became something absolute. Actually, there were a lot of entrepreneurs that agreed to buy all their equipment, all the, their these two agents' equipment, and a lot of yeah, they bought them all. So there was a high demand for the cinematograph. It's a high demand in Mexico. Yes, so they, like I mentioned, the Lumiere agents presented the president and his family, some essential government officials in his residence, El Castillo de Chapultepec, So he was really pleased. He was really pleased. So we're kind of having a political cinema, and it links to our national social upheavals. When it begins, everything is really about documenting. It's it was not about those fiction, but really kind of looking into realities, and dealing with their own international distribution systems. So there you have it, right? The two agents introduce the cinematograph. You got the president making movies. You got people investing on the cameras, and the people that invested in the cameras, I mean, the cameras are not small, they're heavy and really technical. So, I mean, this pioneers, they carry these cameras with them, so they carry cinema around all the country, and that's crazy. Because of the success of the cinematograph, it beat up the kinescope of Edison's for obvious reasons, right? The kinetoscope could only be viewed by a limited amount of individuals, one. Only you could see. S at least as far as I know. Maybe there's more than one, I wouldn't doubt, but no more than five. But just raveling. But yeah, the cinematograph was a success. It was really a success. So I want to talk about a pioneer in this podcast, and I mean, one of the reasons why I was inspired to do this podcast about the Mexican cinema was because I was in my visit in Mexico. My nephew gifted me a booklet about cinema, and it was in Spanish, and kind of gave a little info about here and there, directors, movies, and in one page it had in one of the pages it had Salvador Toscano, and I read his bio. He was one of the pioneers, and where he was from. Oh, here, let me. I should pull it up, the actual pamphlet, so I can just read it out. Yes, I mean, it was actually pretty short. Just it's the time that he was born, 1872 to 1947. Kind of just a quick bio. He was an engineering entrepreneur, filmmaker. He was from Jalisco, and he was the pioneer of Mexican cinema. So he just in this one description, it just tells you that he went to France and bought the apparatus, and he started making showings and making his own films, and kind of inspired me to look more into it. So and little after that, it does have the picture of President General General President Porfirio Díaz with Memorias de un Mexicano, which is one of his emblematic films that took many, 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 many years to make. So I'll be talking about that. So just really going back into the history of the Lumiere brothers. So yeah. So Salvador Toscano, when all this is happening, he was 21 years old. He was a student. He sacrificed his savings to import a project. I'm sorry, to import the projector and the short films, like The Trip to the Moon, The Kingdom of the Fairies. So that was his big accomplishment. One of the things that I learned in my research is that her daughter was her editor, and they find in her house, like, now their house is like a museum. It's it does it, yeah. But they found two boxes that have index cards with negative and positive films, and they are a certain order, which people take that they are the storyboard for the film, the last 30 years of. Let me see. Sorry, I have the article. Oh, the last 30 years of Mexico. So they think that when I say they, it's just assume that the cut that is out about the memories of a Mexican is based on Salvador Toscano, but in fact he didn't edit that movie. That's what it's saying. He didn't edit the movie. There, somebody else kind of put it together, but that wasn't the idea. That wasn't its main purpose. So I find that very interesting because, I mean, he basically was one of the first filmmakers in Mexico, and he started filming all these realities, and the concept of documenting was unheard of. I mean, in a sense of documentaries, right? It wasn't really unheard. And he would film a lot of realities, a lot of the everyday occasions. So in many years, he that after so many years, decades of work, he was able to have the movie Las Memorias de un Mexicano, The Memories of a Mexican. And I watched that movie. And it's a documentary, and I was just blown away because, like, those are the same images that I watched when I was a little kid. And, like, I'm watching it now, grown up, trying to understand the context, and it's like, wow, I was it, and it just brings me back, and I, like, wow, like, so the history of it of really is, oh, you take all this documentation from many years about really historic events. like a revolution in a country, that things are happening. Like, this is documentation of how Porfirio Diaz is elected and his rise and his downfall to take over. It's amazing to see the narration, the story just go on and take you. And these are real demands. And once again, this is where we answer the question, what does it mean to be Mexican? And what is it being portrayed? And what are the first this realities about, what is a Mexican? So the Mexicans begin shooting their local versions of the Lumiere brothers' realities. These early filmmakers use French app, use the cameras to just go on and they kind of target to the upper class audiences, and for the lower class, they constructed, or at least they used tents for them, so they try to work their ways out, but there was definitely classism too. Hollywood in Europe offered a continuous supply of new products for the enterprising Mexican business people. And then again, we were quickly buying, spending all the savings, like Salvador Toscano did. He was considered one of the most successful filmmakers and exhibitors. They show more than 200 local and foreign films in Mexico alone. When I say they, I talk about Enrique Rosas too. I didn't really study him or like research about him, but he comes up a lot too, and it'll be a different podcast for him. And I'm talking about film history and Mexico. So he along with Salvador Toscano are considered the most successful filmmakers, so I'll give him props for that. So that's 1905, and by 1906, we started to see theaters constructed, and we started to see the tents going away. By 1907, and they're gone. 1911, now we get really nice theaters and film established in Mexico City. I don't think the dates here are so important, but it's important for the context of the time and how is film impacting that. So in 1996, Porfirio Diaz was elected for the fourth presidential term. So Mexican cinema started in the agony of El Porfiriato, which is referred to the time frame that General Porfirio Diaz was in power. So a lot of things are going on during this time when Mexican cinema got started. One of them is the telephone network started going more wide in Mexico. It was extended, expanded. Okay. They kind of knew the century was ending. I mean, the time cycle was a new era happening. There is mining industry getting electrified. The first motors are installed in the mines. Rail workers are creating unions. During this time, check it out, the population is over 10 million, close to 14 million people living in the country. Another thing, the post office is get started. The first kart races. The metal industry is born. Petroleum is discovered, but then quickly, North America and Europe companies will control it. And 1904, guess what? Porfirio. General Porfirio Diaz is elected for the sixth time. Now, Salvador looks at General Porfirio Diaz with love. He doesn't really hate him. And we kind of needed somebody to take control over the country, even though it was going to cost the country a lot. But he put control, even though he was a dictator, he was able to manage the country and establish the rules. So it was valid. But he started to become unpopular because of all these re-elections are not helping the overall country. It's only benefiting the elite. It's only benefited the people on top. So there's a lot of it's a lot of people rising up. So in 1909, Francisco Madero creates a petition to they create an opposition to the general president Porfirio Diaz, and they tell that Francisco Madero will be their presidential candidate. So they got a president going. Like Francisco Madero, he's really he's a national hero. You know, he had this democracy about, you know, like can't have this guy, so like you can't have somebody in power for that long. So they kind of wanted him to be president. And yeah, this is just leading up to the revolution. And just like shit went down in the 1911 because the revolution spread all over the country. There's a state called Morelos. That's where I lived for 10 years. And there is this peasant leader, Emiliano Zapata. He becomes an uprising and becomes a national symbol by the way that he becomes a revolutionary. I was taught this history lesson when I was in second, third grade. I mean, all the way through school, I was always learning about Mexican history and Morelos, Emiliano Zapata. Kind of was asking myself when I was going to utilize this again, and it's kind of cool to tie it together with my film cinema class. And yeah, just talk about it, right? Like the history of this people and how it affects how it affects film and cinema, or how they affect film.